The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Alright, welcome to the football show sponsored by AIB. Lads, isn't it great to have the championship back? That's all I can say. Just fantastic.
It's great. The hurling championship?
Hurling championship too, yeah, but that's for the next show, which is coming out later on, the hurling show, so make sure you tune into that as well. But we have a fantastic show today because we've loads to get through. We've Kieran Hughes coming on the show to talk to us about that absolutely ridiculous black card. Well, by the letter of the law, it was a black card, but Jesus, give me a bloody break. And we have Brendan Murphy coming on, outstanding midfielder, got a great compliment off the Gooch last night, and Carlow had a brilliant win. They had probably the performance of the weekend, the result of the weekend. I tipped it last Thursday, so I obviously have to brag about that. But I don't want to start the first day about the black card. But we have to go heavy on this, or else it's never going to change. And I'm wondering how these things are going to iron out, because Kieran Hughes only lasted 7 minutes. He ran off the field, sprinted into the dressing room. That's his championship game over. Like, don't they play Cavan next? If it ends Cavan and that happens without Darren in midfield, that could be a game changer. That could be the game over for them. And it was petulant, it was stupid. Monaghan were in possession of the ball. It wasn't cynical, it wasn't what the black card should be about. And I don't know what players are going to do here, lads. I'm actually starting to think that the GPA need to get involved here and release a statement and say, lads are training too hard for this nonsense and for referees to be ending their championship games too early like that. Because why can't it be for professional fouls? Let's roll back on the different offences. And we said this all last year, and it looks to me already in the championship nothing's going to change, and we're going to be wasting our time, good valuable analysis time, talking about this. And you know, from what we've seen so far, this is going to be a team of the summer again.
Yeah, it is. Look, it's always very disappointing to see any player having to leave the field early in a game. I'm going to provide a little bit of balance and say, look, the rule is there. Yeah. Everybody knows what the offences are at this stage.
I know, but Jesus.
But you put yourself in that position. Kieran Hughes was just a little bit silly.
It was a rush of blood to the head.
It was
he has a player that has a bit of a temper. He plays on the edge. It wasn't what the black card is about.
No, I totally agree. Look, he went to ground in a bit of a tussle, and he stuck out his hand to just flick at your man's leg and pull him down with him, totally off the ball. To be honest with you, I wouldn't have given a black card. I don't think, exactly as you say, it wasn't what the rule is intended for. And I think I would have a little bit more sympathy actually as well for Dottie Waters for Wexford as well. His black card, which was innocuous enough as well. I mean, I know, you see, this is the problem with the wording of it, a deliberate foul. You know, it's very, very difficult for any referee to interpret whether something is deliberate or not.
I think it should be changed to blatant. As in, you know, deliberate is a bit ambiguous, but blatant is like there is no grey area in blatant, you know. And I don't think the Waters one was blatant. We're going to talk to Brendan Murphy. I'm going to have to question him about, like, this was simulation of the highest order. Like, I mean, but you know, like, that's it. But players can do that now if they want to get somebody black card.
Oh, they absolutely can. Like, I mean, if a fella grabs your jersey at any stage in the game, if you go down, I mean, the referee can think, did he pull him down there? He obviously deliberately pulled him, because you can't accidentally pull somebody's jersey.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't happen by accident. Oh, my hand got caught. Like, that's one of the obvious ones. But
there's just too many offences that warrant the black card.
The game is too fluid, and in a lot of situations you can have it that guys just get involved in a tangle. Like, bodies come together in a situation where somebody carries the ball into a couple of bodies, and sometimes you can be the defensive player there, and a guy comes at you at pace, you put your body in the way. If he hits you and you're falling backwards, your reaction is to just grab the person that's after running into you.
Yeah.
You know, as you're being, but then you could get a black card for pulling them down.
Yeah.
Like, it's madness, but we've seen it so many times. It's just so disappointing that we're waffling on about it again because it drives everybody mad.
This has to stop, though. It has to stop because this is the first round of the championship and we've seen examples of it. And I try to stay away from it as much as possible. And I'm a huge defender of the black card. Always have been because I think, you know, the whole reason for bringing it in was the right one and I think it has a purpose. But the referees are making a balls of it, not the black card.
The ref didn't make a balls of it. Like, the ref... he did what he was supposed to do. The rule has to change. You're a defender of the reason of the black card, but not the actual letter.
Conan, what happens with the refs is at the start of a championship, there's more scrutiny on them and they make these decisions. I guarantee you that we won't see those lads getting black cards down the line later on.
It depends on the referee, so you're double guessing it.
In Croke Park, you nearly have to kill somebody to even give a free away. Oftentimes, like that's the way it goes. So early on in the championship, I don't know what it is, but maybe it's they're under pressure from assessors because later on in the championship, referees are being assessed all the way along. They don't get the big games unless they're ticking all the boxes as they go. I'm not sure of the process, but you'd have to be suspicious that there's something like that going on. That there's, you know, they have to tick everything perfectly because they're not using what we'll call, you know, what everyone says, the common sense approach. Well, what is common sense for the referees to apply the rules?
Exactly. And I do think ex-players need to be referees or something needs to happen because there's not common sense there. And that's not a black card. It is, like you said, Conan, it is a black card, but it's not.
Yeah, the rule is stupid. Like, you know, by the letter of the law, it was a foul, but the law is silly, so the law should change. Yeah. Like, it's simple.
They need to refine it. And I genuinely think the GPA need to get involved in here because it's their members that are being losing games. And we know about the structure of the championship. You might only have one or two, and you're losing. There's lads being sent off and are going in big, important games then as well. And it's like, what am I training for? For a bloody referee without any real understanding to give this broad. The rule is so broad that they're kind of snookered, you know what I mean? There's so much wrong with it. GPA, come out, defend your players, and let's get this black card ruling redefined, and before it's too late, before we waste so much time all summer talking about it. But we'll move on there, boys, because I want to talk about this Ty Kennelly thing and Tomás O'Shea thing before we actually get into talking about Kieran Hughes. And it's very interesting stuff because Tomás O'Shea, like, I can see it from both sides. Tomás O'Shea wrote a piece on Saturday, you know, saying that he can't understand what Ty Kennelly's doing, and you can see where Tomás is coming from. Like, I mean, you're a Kerry man, a Kerry supporter. I'm a Laois man, and if Clifford goes to Australian rules, I'll be livid because I can't wait to see him and I want him to light up the championship. So if I was from Kerry, you'll multiply that by 100. But I actually contacted Ty Kennelly this morning to come on to the show on Thursday, and Ty wouldn't come on. He said he'd be around in July, but Ty said he's never spoken to Clifford, nor has any AFL club. And he says even if he does go, which is really unlikely, the numbers stack up against him making it. And we spoke, Conan, about that. Very few players that actually go out there ever make it. Like, they all come home. And this isn't a Kerry problem with their good minors. Kildare have been decimated by it. Laois, with Begley, Quigley and Zach Toohey, Meredith. There's a whole load of lads in Laois went. It happens in every county. It's not unique to Kerry. But it's just interesting that, you know, all this talk has been about Clifford. And Tyke says here, There's nobody even on the Clifford.
Well, we touched on that the last day. Like, I mean, the Mark O'Connor that went across, he's a midfielder. He's a very athletic fella, up and down the field, always has been. Probably has the athletic profile they want. You know, I haven't seen enough of Clifford to argue on that either way, but I would suspect that he's an inside forward and that he isn't going to fit the bill out there.
That would be my view.
Oh,
yeah.
Clifford scored a goal yesterday in the county championship in Kerry for East Kerry against Mid Kerry, and it was exactly the sort of stuff that he can't do in the AFL. He sold a dummy in the 13, left a defender on his arse, and curled a lovely finish into the top corner. Yeah. Can't do any of that in the AFL. Someone just grab you and pull you to the ground.
That's it. That's the exact. And Mark O'Connor put a statement out on Twitter defending Ty Kennelly, saying that Ty made his dreams come true, and you can't say lads, you know. Tomás was kind of saying lads have a right to go over and, you know, follow their dreams, but then Mark says, well, then how can you ever criticise the fella who makes that happen for us?
I thought it was a reasonable statement from Mark O'Connor.
For a young fella
I thought it was good. Look, I think Tomás O'Shea is coming out and he's defending the Kerry patch because he doesn't want to see any more Kerry players going away.
Yeah.
There's been players from all over the country being dragged. I mean, there's been plenty from Laois. There's been some serious talent taken from Laois. Some lads came back, but, you know, they've lost players. Players from Down have come and gone. It happens. And
you just have to suck it up. And the way I look at it,
get on with it. But I think that the one good point that he did make, and I think it's kind of been lost a little bit, is that he was kind of saying, look lads, there has to be something that can be done to try and keep some of these majorly talented players, like can scholarships in colleges, all this sort of stuff. That was really the point that I took out of the article, that he was saying, look, we need to do more as a GAA community to try and protect our best assets, shall we call, because that's what they are now, they're assets that the GAA make money off by gate receipts at matches. So how can they be protected?
Could they be, if they sign up to a development squad at 12, could they be signed up to that development squad?
Oh, no, you're going...
Do you know what I mean? But, like, there has to be... Like, I was tweeted out and I got a lot of people saying I didn't know what I was talking about by saying Australian clubs should have to compensate a county board in some way. Like, they're ripe for the picking. It's a fairy tale stuff for a professional club to come in. Like, I mean, if you come into a soccer schools club, an English Premier League, they're not professional, but they'll have to get compensated in some way for the players.
Well, the only way you could do something like that, in my view, is that if you actively engage with the like of a Ty Kennelly and maybe set up that there's a rookie club for Aussie rules in Ireland, and that therefore all the county boards or whoever sets it up get some funding from the club, in essence, to coach those games here. I mean, that's the way it would work, but nobody's going to really want to entertain that, because it's all been done on a voluntary basis here, coaching our own games. We're not going to want to add the extra remit of trying to coach Aussie rules and maybe get a few bob that way. The best way is to try and look after what we're doing, which is keep people here, keep players here, you know what I mean? And I think that's by education, keeping them here, giving them scholarships, but all this stuff already happens anyway.
But you're talking about a professional game versus an amateur game.
You can't keep them here if they want to go.
You can't. Very simple. And then I look at Zach Toohey and I look at his lifestyle out there now, living in Melbourne. He's a baby out there. He's married. Where would he be going stuck in Port Leash at his age, playing in Division 4 with Leash? And like, are you really going to tell lads? You have. I can understand the frustration, and we hated losing Zach in Port Leash, but you have to think about Zach, not think about yourself.
Absolutely.
And that's just the way it is.
You
have to think about Mark O'Connor, you have to think about Clifford. Stop thinking about Kerry football. Think about the individual and the opportunity that gives them. And it's not easy, but that's what you have to do to make it okay.
It's just propaganda. It's just Kerry propaganda from Tomás. He couldn't care less if these lads were going from other counties.
Yeah.
It's only a big deal because they're worried. They obviously have a worry about Clifford, which I think is a non-worry anyway. I just don't see it. Like
that, what worries people about your idea, Willie, is that it would change the end goal. And like in soccer clubs, like their end goal is to get people to England, and they do make a bit of money. But if we started saying, let's get these people to the AFL and we make a bit of money, would people start actively pursuing getting these lads on their professional?
Yeah, no, they're doing that now, Conan. I'm telling you, there's lads in contact with Australian clubs. That's happening at the moment. You know what I mean? I'd say there's lads even making money off this thing, you know, like agent type things. I would be fairly sure of that because I heard that kind of thing going on.
I wouldn't have really any concerns about it. It's such a low percentage, and if, for God's sake, if you lose one or two players, majority of them actually come back. It's not a big deal for me.
Yeah, okay, that's great stuff, lads. Listen, we want to get into the action here now because we wanted to get a few of those talking points out of the way because Kieran Hughes is on the line now. Kieran, how are you feeling after Saturday night? You're probably not sore anyway. You didn't last long enough.
No, body's feeling 100%. Really, no need for me to do the ice park. So we're out there over the weekend, but just have to get the show on the road again.
Yeah, what's that like, Kieran, getting a black card after 7 minutes of an Ulster Championship match?
Well, first thoughts were just extremely frustrating. It was my first ever black card, and you know, I sort of got away all right without sort of getting any cards at all in the league, and you know, just thinking when the corner was turning in terms of discipline area, buying black cards last after 7 minutes for something that's just ridiculous, I thought. But you know, you train like a dog all year and travel and do all these things, and then all of a sudden in the biggest game at the start of the year, you're off and you're looking at the rest of the boys and talking about the field for the rest of the game. It's just no other way to explain it other than just very frustrating. But I do feel for the referees. There's no doubt about that. Look, there's so many other things to look at on the field and keep an eye on, and for them to be having to flash a card for something they got there just makes no sense to me now.
Yeah, what do you remember of the actual incident?
I got looking at it last night again. I remember at the time I'd shipped the ball off to Vinnie Corey, and the ball was gone about a second or two, and I remember feeling contact or a fist in me ribs, and then I went to the ground and tried to grab the fella to more or less say, you know, that'll be the last time, and I ended up my arm was in the ground and he just tripped over it, and the ref was going to let the play go and he didn't see this, and I just looked up and seen the linesman and the crowd behind him were roaring and shouting, and then I just presumed, initially thought that the ref was going to come over and throw the ball up and let the boy stop the messing away on about your business. And dying flash card, away I went, running in the direction like a lunatic, I suppose. Don't know what was trying to bag, and just head was fried.
So what did you do then? You ran down the tunnel. You just went in and sat in the dressing room?
Yeah, I just went in and just looked at the ceiling, just thinking, this is it, kicking off again. Like, you know, I'm the easiest target to talk about discipline, and everybody wants to talk about, oh, he's at it again, and blah, blah, blah. But I'm just like, this card shouldn't be shown for something like that there. When I'm after going back out of the dressing 15 minutes later, and I'm seeing stuff unfold on the field that is 10 times worse going on, and nothing being done about it, and no cards being shown. And I'm just total disbelief. And it's not just me. It's going to happen again next weekend, the weekend after, and the year ahead. And you have the likes of Gooch and these boys that it's deadly to see them on the Sunday game. And they're going to be talking about black yard incidents. You don't want that. You want them in the show to dissect the game down and talk about tactics, talk about the skill of the game. Not to be wasting our time talking about a card that should be completely irrelevant in the JAA.
So would you prefer the black card to be done away with altogether, or maybe redefine the rules and, you know...
I think redefine the rules. I never really got into any black card talk to anybody before, but again, until it happens, it begins to be a talking point. I definitely think that the wording of it should be sorted out. I personally thought at the start it was brought in to sort out, you know, a clear goal scoring opportunity or a clear point taking opportunity, but yet the ball was gone, you know, nearly the far side of the field of the day, and you know, there was nothing that was interrupting the play that I thought.
Yeah, so like,
but
I mean,
I felt sorry for the ref.
Yeah, no, it was the linesman. I was right behind it. I was actually just in the stand right in front of that there, and it was the linesman 100% that alerted the referee to it. And it was almost like he just kind of got a rush of blood to the head, a bit like you. You probably weren't thinking, oh, let's be cynical here and drag him down. You were just fuming. You were fuming about getting the box, and you wanted to try and grab him.
Absolutely, yeah. And people can talk about, oh, his head went through getting a punch. What man wants to get a punch in the ribs? And like, I just went to grab him to say, look, this will be the last time of this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which I'd like to think anybody would do. And I missed the grab, and ended up him, he just tripped over my arm. And yes, 100% probably looked bad. And anybody that has no time for me is 100% going to ridicule me straight away. And I'm 100% with that. That's grand. Everybody's allowed their opinion on the whole thing. But to be put off after 7 minutes of the summertime ball is just, folks can't describe it sometimes. It's just very frustrating, though.
And especially because you were, after starting the game so well, scored a great point. Like, I mean, you know, you're out in a new midfield role and you look to be really enjoying it, so that just adds to the frustration on top of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I was feeling real good going into the game. I was looking forward to it all week, and you know, decent enough start, and I was looking forward to, you know, continuing it on too, but that's probably what's annoyed me mostly over the last 24-48 hours, you know, that I didn't really get to see where I was at, maybe fitness wise and they got there. But again, you live and you learn. Look, it's definitely an area, Wally, you know, the discipline area I've tried to work on in the last couple of years, and again, nobody mentions anything to you during the league when you're picking up no cards or getting in the middle of no schmozzles, and
yeah,
then all of a sudden you get into some wee small little silly altercation, and bang, everybody's on your back again, and you just can't do anything right sometimes.
How have you been working?
Look at.
Sorry, go on.
Sorry.
How have you been working on your discipline, Kieran? Because we know you're an aggressive player and you play on the edge, and I suppose that's what makes you the player that you are. What have you been doing to maybe curtail that a little bit?
Well, I'm trying to, you know, have word of the boys maybe to get a bit of contact on me in training. And, you know, over the last couple of years, I probably haven't been in the best shape, you know, I wanted to be in. And I do believe that you need the fitness levels to be able to deal with any sort of contact or anything on the field. And it's been, you know, trying to get the lungs open up as best I can and get the blood pressure settled down a wee bit. And look, I know there's plenty of players out there with a short fuse, and they could all agree, but then the players that don't maybe get involved in anything, everybody's made up different. That's the only way I can look at it. And again, you know, I'd ship the ball off a second or two and get in contact after it was just tough to deal with at the time. And again, I just have to bite the bullet, and I'm old enough and been about the game long enough now to realise I just have to get back on board and, you know, just go again at it.
And did somebody come in and get you when you're in sitting in the dressing room on your own, or did you just come back out when you calmed down yourself?
No, well, I probably would have come back out. Like, but don't get me wrong, Willie, if somebody had been at the back door to Lonis now, pulled up in a car or a van, I 100% would have jumped into the back of it in a way.
Because you ran down the tunnel at high speed. I thought maybe you go straight out like Forrest Gump, you just continue running.
The boys are slagging me after, but I tried to grab the flag, but the flag just came off.
I saw that, I saw that. Just a little triangle came off.
Sure, I don't know what I would have done with the flag. Like, where was I going to go with the flag? If I had seen you in the stand up, probably would have made it.
Jeez, it's funny that you can laugh at it now, but it's a very serious matter at the same time. Like, I mean, if this happens against Cavan, you're already down Darren in midfield. Yeah. Like, if you're going off after 7 minutes, like, there's a bigger picture to look at here completely.
Yeah, there's no doubt it's a bigger picture, but again, that's up to me in the next couple of weeks to try and get myself, you know what, we're going in against Matt. He's our old coach with the club, like, and he knows me, I know him, and he's had a talk with me before, but the discipline issues as well, so there's going to be nothing new there. But my biggest argument in the whole thing is that it's going to happen again during the summer, whether it's me or somebody else, and there's going to be another talking point about it. And I just don't like the way our time has to be wasted on, on the whole topic when there's so much more happening, so much serious good football being played out there, but yet people always want to bring it back to stupid
rule. Yeah, no, I agree. We even started the show talking about it, which is something I hate doing and I try to avoid at all costs. Come here, talk to us about your midfield role, because you've really settled down there now and it looks like you enjoy it a lot more. I was looking at McCarron and McManus in the full forward line and they were being covered nearly by two men and then two men standing in front of them and thinking, geez, you must be thinking it's nice not to be in there anymore.
Yeah, you can read my mind. You know, the last couple of years been very frustrating for me in there. Now it's just an army full of men. They come to big games of the year. Like, it's just the same stuff happening every year, and just everybody's streaming back into that area. But probably my movement wasn't as good as the rest of the boys in there, and I never really had a settled position for Monaghan since I started to play. So I set myself last November, December, just to really try and nail down a certain spot in the field. And, you know, to do that, there was going to be certain elements in my game that were going to have to change as well. And definitely enjoyed the league now, I have to say. I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, getting on the ball around there and going up against the likes of, you know, David Moore and these fellas who have nailed their positions and their respective teams, you know, over the past couple of years. And, you know, you'd be watching them come the latter stages of the All-Ireland Championship and you're thinking, you know, you'd love to be able to put yourself up against them fellas around that area. But again, it's definitely enjoyable at the moment, but, you know, wherever Maliki or the boys reckon that it's going to best suit me, I'll go there for them. But for the time being, now, I'm a content man, you know, having the likes of Jack and Manzi and McCarthy, these boys ahead of me now.
Yeah, you don't strike me as you're the most patient fella to be playing in there without a supply of ball. At least in midfield, at midfield you can win. It's dependent on yourself to get on the ball.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I mean, you're talking about the how I've worked on my discipline earlier on in previous years. I think that would have been another way, you know, trying to sort my head out. If you could get 5 ball in a whole game, and you nearly need to do 4 really top things with 4 of them. Like, and I was maybe doing 1 out of 5 good things, but then my head was just fried, and I was just like, I can't deal with it in here at all. Don't get me wrong, there's days where the ball could be flying in left, right, and centre, and you could have a field day, but they're few and far between them games nowadays in the modern game. But the boys, Mandy and the Jacko, now they have a serious good mentality now. They know the amount of ball that could come in the game, and they know the amount that, or how little they could get on, but they really make the most of it at the moment.
Yeah, so you see, they're finishers, so they're obviously a lot more patient. But do you think you help yourselves? Because when you drag your whole half forward line back into the midfield, you're immediately giving them up their half back line to cover the two lads. And when you have two lads that are as good as them, do you think in some way you shoot yourselves in the foot a little bit?
Yeah, well, you see it every weekend now, Molly. Like, every forward's coming back, and it's probably trying to maintain a level of fitness throughout the year to actually be able to get back there and then be able to get back up. That's one thing I would have struggled with, was when I did get back and maybe do a bit of shadow tackling or something, that I definitely struggled to get back up to get me position.
Yeah.
But games definitely open up after a while, and then you definitely really start to see the bit of skill. Like, you look at the first half of our game of the day, there was very little to be seen all over the field from anywhere. There was just balls just going left and right and down the middle in odd time and back out. But then as soon as the second half got opened up and a wee bit of space was created, look at the boys started to really show what they could do and what they're capable of.
Yeah, no, I think they did. You have Cavan next now, Kieran. Based on the league game, this could end up 4-4 or 5-4 or something like that.
I don't care if it ends up 5-4 as long as we're on the right side of it.
Yeah, but he does. Matty knows you well, I suppose, a lot of you.
Yeah, he's had us for the last 4 years with the club now. Deadly man and a sound operator, and don't get me wrong, I'd love to get one over him and get through to the North semi, but it's part and parcel of summer football. It's nice to look forward to now and for the next couple of weeks, and there'll be a nice wee bit of build up. It's a nice derby game, and we'll be looking forward to setting up our tactics and game plan to try and get one over them. But it's definitely not going to be anything simple, because Cavan would have been looking at our game of the day and trying to dissect us as best they can, and that's what it's all about, I suppose, to see who can get the better of each other. And you know, last 2 times we've played them in the Ulster Championship, there's only been a point between us, and I can't expect anything different than that.
Yeah, no, I think
for the next one.
I think you're right. Yeah, no, it'll definitely be a close one. Kieran, we've run out of time there anyways. Listen, thanks very much for taking the call. Best of luck against Cavan, and hopefully we won't see any more silly black cards for you or for anyone.
You can stick off me. You can jump over the fence the next time for me.
Good stuff.
Cheers, Colin.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? Mm. It happens, yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was, maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out Terry were unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, backing club and county.
I want to talk about this Monaghan tactics, lads. And I was at the game up in Clonus, and I was sitting up on the end that Monaghan were attacking in the first half. So the bird's eye view of this. And Monaghan left McCarron and Conor McManus inside on their own. Got a complete brain freeze there on Conor McManus. But left the two lads inside on their own. Their whole half forward line went back into defence. Even Conor McCarthy, a little light kind of corner forward, went back into around the midfield. And we'll talk about Conor McCarthy in a minute, but Conor McCarthy looks like he has a nice bit of class, but he didn't know whether he was coming or going out around midfield. Like, he was completely lost. So, I mean, that's not the role for him. But anyway, there's a huge gap between all the Monaghan team and the two lads inside. Now, you have two grade A class players inside. So Fermanagh used to get possession and they'd move up to midfield and there'd be a big gap between the two of them. The minute Fermanagh lost the ball, you'd see McCluskey, you'd see Breen, and they'd be sprinting back right in front of the two lads. So there's never an option for a pass to the two lads, ever, because Monaghan have so many lads drop back. And Fermanagh, the day of hitting teams on a break is gone. That is gone. That went out the window with Donegal gate crashed in All-Ireland. They surprised everybody by playing counter-attack football. They got one last sting out of it against Dublin in 2014. Yeah. That's gone. The counter-attack is gone. So I don't know why teams can persist with this counter-attack game, especially when you have two lads like McCarron and Conor McManus, Jesus, inside, and you're not using them. Jesus, your team, your whole tactic should be built around getting the most out of these fellas. Like, no ball went into them the whole first half. And I want to talk about the first half more, because the second half turned into a procession. The first half was really competitive, and Fermanagh, you know, were at the pitch of the game. But why are they putting so many men into the defence and not occupying a couple of the half-backs on the other team and allowing them cover their two most dangerous players? And, like, these are two of the best forwards in Ireland. Lads, please, the both of you, try to make me understand why, when you have two brilliant... And I can understand Tyrone playing like that, right? Because we've talked about Tyrone. They don't have the lethal inside forwards. They have a brilliant runners from deep. When you play this kind of system, usually your scores come from your half-back line, your midfield. All these runners from deep, the Ryan McHughes, you know, the Carl O'Connells, all these fellas get great space to run into because they're running past that wall. Why, when you've got two unbelievable players like McCarron and Conor McManus, why do you choose to not be able to get the ball to them?
Well, I don't think that's a choice that Monaghan make
well,
themselves.
I don't think it is, Cian, because they bring back they bring back every other player bar those two lads, so they give the opposition's half-backs nothing to think about, so they just let them stay back.
Well, I don't agree that they do that in every match. I think that they maybe had to do that against Fermanagh by virtue of the way that Fermanagh were going to play. And that's the nub of it. Like, these defensive plans that people have for having sweepers and two sweepers or three sweepers or 12 sweepers or whatever the hell people do these days, depending on the game, that dictates how the opposition can play.
Yeah, it does. So, watching them though, Cian, and Monaghan lads chose to go back there. Fermanagh lads didn't start attacking, and Monaghan lads chose to go back. Like, I mean, if you can hold two in your half forward line, you can still be defensive, but you're still giving McCluskey and Breen, for example, who are holding someone to mark. So then they don't have two or three lads covering your two Ferrari players in the full forward line. They might only have one. Why give them the three free by bringing your half forward
yeah, well,
line
look,
back?
I totally agree with you that there's a balance that there is to be struck, and I wouldn't be in favour of the 13 men behind the ball philosophy in any way, shape or form. I just don't believe in that style of football. I don't believe it's the best way to play the game. I would always want to have at least four forwards up front whenever I could. But then again, every game evolves in a slightly different way. Now, Fermanagh have been quite a defensive team over the last number of years. And what they, really the whole point of their game is to get bodies back to create space up front for themselves. Now, if you go down the route of, say, playing your traditional every man in their position, three in the full forward line, three across the half forward line, that actually in itself limits the space that your full forward line has to move into. You know, that's why teams started developing, maybe bringing a corner forward out to pitch, so that you had your two danger men in the inside line and it was two on two, and they had more freedom and flexibility to interchange positions rather than having three across the line, which actually you crowded yourselves out. So, and that's, it's just constantly evolving from that. Now, I totally agree with you. I think that Monaghan should be leaving more men up the pitch, and particularly McCarthy, who is a quality player and a quality kicker of the ball, and he's kind of a light, nimble type of a player that you would think that he was very well suited to playing in that link role. So maybe Monaghan, look, I'm sure they weren't taking the game for granted. Look, they spoke after the game how they were a little bit disappointed with their first half performance. You know, they're easing their way into the championship. They did exactly what they needed to do. They seemed to me, from looking at the high, you know, some of the slowed down clips after the game and some of the, you know, isolated incidents of their scores, that their inside men were coming around on the loop an awful lot. Now, that is a tactic
they
that
had
has
to.
Yeah,
but
has,
they had
but
to
they had
because,
to do because it was
covered.
So slow.
They were being covered by two men, so they had no choice. But and I've seen it with Donegal against Tyrone in Clonus, where they've two sweepers in front of Murphy and McBrearty, and there's no, like, if you've one sweeper, a diagonal ball will work, you know, because there's going to be space one side or the other. The sweeper will have to cover the side the ball's coming down generally. But when you have two, there's no hope. Like, there's actually no hope. You have no choice if you want a ball but to drift out and hope for the loop.
I think McManus and McCarron were both a little bit over-eager as well when the play did develop.
Maybe a little
like the
bit.
Ball, like, when Monaghan didn't have that option to kick the ball early, you know, to get the ball to the half-forward line and deliver it in early when there was space, one of those two guys had to just stay right in tight to the end line and make their moves from there. They had to, because how many times did we see it? Monaghan were kicking the ball. There was loads of bodies. Every player was between the 45 metre line and the 21.
Now, to be fair, Whelan showed a couple of clips like that last night. In fairness, Conor McManus was trying to be that player. It's very easy to find one or two examples where they both drifted.
Well, he generally is good, and that's why McCarron probably has been getting more scores than him during the league, because McCarron comes out on the loop and McManus is, you know, he's playing that role which he has to for the team. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure McManus would want at times. He's probably getting fed up in there. He's like, geez, I want to get my hands on the ball here. I have to come out. But for the benefit of the team, he has to stay dangerous in there.
Yeah.
He has to. Look, at. We can look at isolated incidents in any game and come to a conclusion. I just think that it's very, very difficult when you come up against a defensive team to find that space. And
you just have to play four forwards, though, Keane. I can't understand the logic behind
but
not
this,
playing
this
the
is
forward.
What happens. If you play four forwards, the opposition plays five or six defenders anyway. So what teams are trying to do is bring bodies back a little bit deeper. Like, how often do you see it? Like, to me, your half-forward line is getting a handy ball if he just drops off 10 yards. Do you know what I mean? Like,
because the half-backs aren't following him, because they're covering the
but
two
to me,
brilliant
But to me, that's
inside.
A cop-out. I think that's a complete cop-out from your half-forward, because he's coming and getting the handy ball, but he's not doing anything. He's just getting the ball from his half-back in his own midfield and doing nothing. He's too far away to give a good ball in. He's actually contributed to having an extra defender back there for the opposition, whereas what he should be doing is going right up against his man into that, in maybe onto the 45-metre line and making hard runs to try and create that link position.
Yeah. But they're not doing that. That's the point I'm making. If you left Carey and McCarthy on the half-forward line and let them make them left and right runs, you're dragging the half-back line out of there. Suddenly McManus and McCarron have space. They have one sweeper instead of three, and then they can make their runs. And, like, you're getting the most. If I was Monaghan, right, because we know they have excellent marking defenders, I would start at the two lads. I could understand it when they only had McManus, but now they have two. Start from there and say, right, how can I get the best out of them? Straight away, you have to have a presence on the half-forward line. If you don't, you're never getting the best. You might as well have Ronan O'Neill and McCurry, like Tyrone. Like, and that's no disrespect to the two lads, but they wouldn't be on the two Monaghan lads' level. So you can understand the Tyrone tactics. Like, Tyrone will have runners coming from deep. But Monaghan are not that team. Monaghan have two players that are so far ahead, as good as anyone in the country, but they're still stuck with the same tactics that worked when they only had one. And I think they need to evolve big time.
Possibly, but they still scored 120. And if you look at it
against the Division 3 team, like, I mean, listen, and that was just in the second half. In the
I
first
know, but
half,
you can only beat what's in front of you on a given day, right? So they scored 120, and maybe what they're looking at is they're saying, right, we have these two lads inside. The opposition is absolutely going to have to play two sweepers against them. That gives us a two-man overlap everywhere else in the field. You know, if you're taking it from that perspective. And Monaghan have a lot of guys who like to run the ball. I'm not too sure how many of the Monaghan players are that comfortable kicking the ball and kicking in long-range foot passing. I don't know if that's a facet of their game that they're overly strong in. So, listen, they have a very, very good manager. He obviously is setting it up to get the best out of his players. Now, look,
he's not getting the best out of the two lads inside, I'm telling you. He might be getting the best out of everybody else.
Well, how much of Monaghan's shape was dictated by how slow Fermanagh were on the ball and how many men they bring forward?
Genuinely, Conan, not to cut you off there, Monaghan dictated this. I watched it. The minute the ball was thrown in, every Monaghan forward, bar the two lads, went back voluntarily. They went back. So I wouldn't be talking about this, and I understand the point if you're playing another defensive team. I was specifically watching this, and they all went back. So they contributed to this. They allowed this to happen under two Ferrari forwards instead of, you know, the opposite of actually trying to say, let's take the game here. Like, Monaghan voluntarily brought their lads back.
And how much of that, I know it was only one player, but Kieran Hughes going off. I mean, like, his score inside the first 5 minutes, he wins the ball and sent the half forward, like, where we're actually saying that they should be winning the ball.
Yeah,
and he just put it over.
He just drifted up there. Like, I mean, he was playing in midfield. Like, I mean, this was 10 minutes. Usually you can see the way a team is going to set up in the first 10 minutes. Like, and it was obvious what Monaghan did. And I was just looking at it and looking at the shape on the game and going, why are you doing this, lads? Like, sure, they're never going to get a pass. They're never going to get a ball. They're being bloody triple marked in there, and you've given this to Fermanagh rather than Fermanagh going, right, we're going to have to bring back some of our forwards and create the extra defenders and ruin our shape. You've allowed them this shape. You've given it to them as a present.
Yeah, well, look, I suppose, again, I go back to the fact it wouldn't be the way I'd like to set up. If you were looking at Monaghan, the players they have, you'd like to get more out of your inside men. You'd like to create space for them and get the ball into them fast. But look, at that's the way they've chosen to set up. I don't know if they'll quite be like that in every game. It could be that they're trying to set themselves up for playing Cavan the next day. Maybe they're using the Fermanagh game as prep for that, where Cavan would have maybe more punch and power on the break, and they're maybe slightly concerned about that.
Maybe.
It's hard to know.
Look at your defenders. Like, you've Fintan Kelly, you've got the two Wileys, you've got Colin Walsh, you've Vinnie Corey, and you've Carl O'Connell. Carl O'Connell played in midfield. You've Neil McAdam played wing back. Desi Moan came on late. Like, I mean, you don't need much help for these lads. Drew Wiley is the best fullback in the country by a mile. He's a nightmare. He put Quigley in his pocket, and Quigley's a decent player.
To me, I think it's strange that with so many men back, to concede 111 probably isn't great, to be honest. Like, that's not a fantastic defensive performance to concede 111. To score 120 is pretty good.
111's not bad. You take 111 in most games, right?
Not if you're playing a team that's at the bottom after being relegated from Division 2 and you're at the top of Division 1. I mean, if you were to go out, like, if you were to go throwback and just say, if Monaghan went out and played them man on man 15, everyone playing in their positions, you know, I'd expect Monaghan to beat them by more than that.
Maybe. Well, to be fair though, when you were playing though, Keane, at
Inter-county level, you can't do that. Like, Fermanagh are going to drop off, and that's the whole purpose of the way Fermanagh are playing.
But if you're saying to your defenders, you say, let's keep them to 11 scores. You, in any championship match, you're going in and say, let's keep them to 11 points. You, everyone would pop their hand and say, yes, we'll take that. No, no matter who you're playing.
Oh yeah, possibly 10 scores. I think less than 10 scores.
I came on here though thinking, geez, my tip, Monaghan to win Ulster, is looking pretty good now. I mean, 19 scores from play. I was looking at the bench.
O'Connor,
like, the guys they brought on. Like, Monaghan are always leveled criticism that they don't have enough depth. But then you look at, like, you know, McInnesby, Duffy, Malone coming on, Desi Moan's back, Darren Hughes still coming. And then I looked and compared that to Donegal's team in 2012, and they were only using 3 subs every time. Like, you know, and like, so Monaghan actually have enough players now to go and compete, I think.
Well, look, Monaghan could easily
made a great impact,
but Monaghan are probably at the stage that they're looking a lot further down the line, and they're probably thinking, right, in order for us to win anything, we have to beat a Tyrone, we have to beat a Donegal, we have to beat a Dublin further down the line, you know, at that stage. So they're probably setting themselves up, unlike Mayo, who seem to just, you know, play differently every day. Monaghan are very much setting themselves up, in my view, that this is the way we're going to play. So by dropping those bodies off, say, from their half forward line or whatever, they're just saying, right, we're not going to be chasing back after the likes of Jack McCaffrey, because we'll never catch him. We're going to be here waiting for him when he does arrive, and we're going to have bodies back there, and we'll play our methodical game, and we still score 120.
And but see, they'll do well in Ulster with that, because the other teams will be doing that. But then last night, like, they showed an example of Monaghan playing Dublin and Monaghan playing Fermanagh. It was like comparing apples with oranges. Well, there was absolutely no logic to this at all.
Well, we had this discussion when we were talking about it during the league, you know, that the Division 2 seemed to be much more cagier and defensive on average than, say, the Division 1 games. Now, I don't know what the reason was for that. I mean, you thought that, you know, I think at the time you were saying that Division 2 teams weren't as sophisticated in their approach just yet. So I'd say there's a bit of truth in that. And sometimes when you play these matches, your opponent can not drag you down, but the way they play can also dictate kind of how you have to play the game to win it.
Yeah. But here's the thing about the Dublin comparison, right? Because Dublin won't waste 2 sweepers against Monaghan. Dublin will play 1. So in that scenario, they had McCarron and McManus against 1 sweeper. So they could 100% through movement and through getting out pop it in front of them and cut out the sweeper and play nice little diagonal balls. And they showed an example of that last night. But please don't compare that to Fermanagh, who Fermanagh leave their half-back line in place, and those little pop balls weren't on. So the comparison was ridiculous. But when you see how well Monaghan played with one sweeper, that's my point. If you play two half forwards, then you're only going, the chances are the other team will only play the one sweeper because they need one defender moving up the field or attacking in some way. So my opinion on this is that Monaghan's tactics have been great the last two or three years in Ulster. They've only had McManus in there. Now they've changed. Now they have two brilliant players. And McCarron didn't play great the other night. Maybe he was under a bit of pressure himself, but he's still a class act. You just know he has it. He's class. He'll swing him over. Now you've got two. You need to change your tactics now, lads. You need to tweak it a little bit to get the best out of these two, because that's not working. And if you want to use those tactics, if I was taking over a team, right, and I had a half back line of, say, Ryan McHugh, Jack McCaffrey and Carl O'Connell, I'd probably play those tactics and I'd say, right, let's get back to defence, let the three sprinters get down the field and they can all score.
Yeah, they'll have cover and you can let
them off. They'll have cover,
yeah.
Let them off, right? Monaghan don't really have that. Like, I mean, they had Colin Walsh score two brilliant scores, in fairness, off his left and right. They have Carl O'Connell that'll run from deep. But they're not blessed with, outside of O'Connell and maybe Walsh, huge scorers as Desi Moan used to be able to get
12
them when he
different
was playing.
Scorers, though.
Yeah, no, and that's fair enough. But I'm talking in general. Like, I mean, the rest of them, well, Fintan Kelly got one off his left. But at the same time, if you want McManus and McCarron to score 4 or 5 from play, or 1, 4 or 5 from play, they won't do that the way you're playing. And if you have those two brilliant players, why not use them? And I know we're going around in circles here, and you want to put a positive spin on it, Conan, and I can understand you putting a positive spin on it, but you have to remember, Monaghan have done nothing outside Ulster in the last 3 or 4 years. And, like, I mean, I've tipped them for Ulster. I think that they're a really strong team. Now that Darren Hughes is gone, maybe, you know, that it might be a bit more difficult for them. But without McCarron and McManus scoring heavily, I don't think they'll beat any, you know, good team. And the way they play at the moment, and maybe they will tweak it against different teams, but the way they're playing at the moment, I can't see how McCarron and McManus can get enough joy just as a result of the way Monaghan are playing. But listen, we'll have to move on and talk about Mayo a little bit, boys. And I actually saw a little bit of this game. I was down in Thurles for the hurling, and I was trying to watch it in a pub, and the pub was full of hurling snobs. Nobody wanted to watch the football at all. It was almost like if this was a foreign sport. Nobody even turned around to watch it. So I was standing there looking at the telly, and there was lads standing in the way of the telly, and I had to just tap them saying, sorry, you wouldn't, like, literally standing 6 inches from the television where you've no chance of even looking around them. And, like, they get the hump to have to move out of the way of the telly. So I only watched about 20 minutes of it, and it wasn't exactly quality viewing. But, like, by all accounts, Mayo kind of, you know, they didn't exactly set fire for a lot of the game.
No, Mayo weren't, they weren't overly impressive, but look, it was a comprehensive enough win in the end. They always looked pretty comfortable. Sligo set up very, very defensively, you know, playing with an absolute gale of wind in the first half. They pretty much only played one forward. Adrian Marin was out the pitch,
yeah,
an awful
lot.
Yeah,
that was surprising why he was drifting when he was, yeah, there's a target man in there. Why is Marin not in close to him? We talked about this last
Thursday. Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise to me, yeah.
What?
We talked about it in the Monaghan segment there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a strange one, because I think Marin is a class forward, yeah, and to see him so far from goal, I just thought it was a little bit unusual from Sligo's perspective. But Mayo did what they had to do. Look, they're so strong in their half-back line attacking and around the middle of the field. They're just such powerful men. Fergal Boland was decent enough. He kicked a couple of scores. But look, you wouldn't be too afraid of them from an attacking perspective. I know they lost Kevin McLaughlin quite early in the game through injury, but they're just not doing enough for me really yet. But look, it's very early days. Like, I mean, but you'd like to see them rip a team apart up front.
Yeah, when they move the ball,
you never see it. Like,
yeah, when they move the ball well, though, they're great to watch. Mayo, like, I mean, they play a very traditional style of football now. Like, I mean, they'll look for the target man more, and they'll lay it off to a half forward running through. And I don't know what it is about me when we grew up in the '90s. That was the way your team played in the '90s, where you'd always have half forward running at pace. This was the way the coach would tell you. Win the ball in the full forward line, lay it off to a man running past, then you're through and goal. And I think Mayo do that. And for me, maybe I'm very easy on Mayo because the kind of play football I like to watch.
Yeah, but the thing with Mayo is those half forwards coming through aren't as deadly as you'd like them to be. I mean, I heard Desi Doan say during the game that they just need to find a Peter Canavan or a Matty Ford.
I'm tired of that narrative. Like, stop. Well,
why don't they just go get one, for God's sake? Like, you know, why are they leaving these boys lying around the county? That seems to be the idea of it all. But they actually look more threatening when they're coming a little bit from deeper with Durkin and Keegan. But I think Keegan playing in the middle is stifling him a little bit.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I'd like to see Keegan on the attack more often. I think they'd be better served with him. But sure, look, we've had this conversation before. But look, similar to Monaghan, it's quite difficult for the Mayo full forward line to catch fire as well, because they don't look. When they played yesterday against Sligo, very, very difficult with conditions, the wind the way it was, very, very hard to get quality delivery into your full forward line with so many bodies back from Sligo. So Mayo end up, it just happens game on game, it's just this constant running game where your star players are your half back line and your midfielders, because they're the ones that get the freedom to carry the ball pretty much unopposed a lot of the time. And your inside forwards are making 15 runs to just get their hands on the ball, and all they're able to do then is get it and hand pass it straight back to somebody else who's coming on. So, you know, you think that some of these guys, your better shooters, would be better suited to play and maybe further out the field. Maybe that's why Killian O'Connor has been switched out a little bit more for Mayo. And to be fair to him, whenever he did get on the ball, he was looking to get his head up and deliver the ball into the inside line. I think that's always the benefit of having an inside forward when he comes out the field. His first instinct nearly always is to get his head up and try and hit the full forward line, which, you know, guys that play out the field an awful lot, they tend to carry the ball that little bit more. But look, it's very difficult against those crowded defensive. Monaghan, they did what they had to do and they were comfortable.
And do you think, like Sligo, like, I mean, does Sligo really think they're going to hit Mayo on the counter-attack with the wind? Like, I mean, where is Sligo coming up with these tactics? Is it just a matter of trying to keep the score down?
It looked like that to me, to be honest.
You ended up losing by 9 points. And you were in the game towards the end. But at the same time, if you've got a wind, Christ almighty, surely the defensive tactics come in when you're against the wind. Like, I mean, it's really caught fire. You can't do that with the wind. Surely you want to try and run up. They would have had to go in that game 4 or 5 points up to have any chance in the second half. And you're not going to do that by bringing that many men behind the ball with the wind.
No, they just couldn't get traction forward, could they? Like, I mean, even when the ball was going in, like, I mean, Pat Hughes won one particularly brilliant ball and nearly kicked a great score.
But he did, yeah.
It was just few and far between, and he was battling manfully up there and was doing, you know, pretty well by all accounts, because he wasn't getting much supply, and the ball that did come in, he was battling very hard for it under severe pressure from, you know, more often than not, 2 Mayo defenders. But look, again, it's just quite negative approach to the game. I would prefer to have seen Sligo, you know, have maybe a bit more of a cut to it, you know, have it, like, they still conceded 2-14, you know, like, and they're playing this such a defensive game. Like, why not leave a few more players up the field?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think you're giving it to the other team to dictate the pace of the game then, like, with dropping that many, and you're hoping for the turnover. But the teams now, I want to say this again. The idea of being caught by a defensive team is gone now. You look at Dublin, you look at Mayo, you look at any team now, they're all patient with it. They're not giving you those turnovers that you're trying to live off on the counter-attack. Number two, if you do turn it over, they're not being so stupid as to push everybody forward. So you're not going to catch them on the counter-attack. The day of this 30-man behind the ball, it's gone, lads. Yeah, it's gone. Move on from these tactics. They're gone. What team has won anything outside of an Ulster Championship using these tactics since Donegal? No team. That's 4 years ago, 2012, 5 years ago now. Stop these tactics. They don't work. They don't work. Counter-attack football doesn't work anymore.
No, teams are too savvy.
Do I say it any more clearly?
No, you've major point. You've major point. A point well made, I must say.
That man a glass of water, Shane.
Right, listen, we're going to move on here before I have a heart attack.
Yeah, move on.
It was a perfect game for me. It was a quarter final. They could get Cafferty a run out. You know, it was just, they haven't had a quarter final in a while, have they? Like, rather than getting hit by Galway straight away, they got a nice
It'll do them good, because they're playing Galway. Now, Galway will have been waiting for them from the league final, be well up for it. But yeah, it was a good game for Mayo. They got a few guys game time into them, you know, so they'd be very pleased with the victory.
Yeah, okay, great stuff, lads. We'll be back with performance of the weekend.
Mm-hmm. is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D right at home by where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
A crowded area, isn't
you're
it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Performance of the weekend, lads. There are plenty of nominations, so many games. Broderick, obviously, from Carlo, he was outstanding. He got 10 altogether, 5 from play. Robbie Smith.
Yeah, Robbie Smith from Longford was super. I mean, to score 11 points out of 16 when your team is well beaten is particularly impressive, and he got 5 from play as well. And, you know, got a few really, really good scores under severe pressure. He's a very good forward, actually. I've seen him a few times, and he's a quality player. He's put in a massive performance last year in the qualifiers as well against Monaghan. I think he might have got 2-3 or something that day. But
right.
He's a quality player, and look, that's just seriously impressive, I think. Mm. When your team loses as an inside forward, yeah, to score 11 out of 16,
you know,
is so good.
Do you know, it's actually the fact that when you play really well and your team loses, that performance just is brushed. Everyone forgets, yeah, the good performance. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. It might be only a point or two in the difference, but the difference between when you play really well and your team wins to when your team loses, it's just like, we'll give Robbie Smith a good talk up here because it never happens. Paul Kingston deserves a shout out as well, 2-1, and his two goals were outstanding goals as well. Brilliant finishes, especially the second one, and even the first one was really good. I think he kind of gave the goalkeeper the eyes there and
he
just
did,
went off,
yeah,
the outside of the boot. Beautiful finish.
Yeah,
I didn't realise.
Very
Paul,
very unorthodox kind of a finish,
yeah,
but it was just so apt. It was perfect for the
perfect
position he was in.
You wouldn't have predicted that's what he was going to do at all. It was an outstanding goal.
Yeah, Brendan Murphy deserves a shout for the arrogance to go for a goal when they're a point up with like 3 minutes of injury time gone.
Yeah.
Just like fisted over you here, but he just kept going.
As a teacher said one time, it's not arrogance if you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, I'm glad you. Oh, Owen Duffy deserves a mention as well, because he was outstanding. He really gave Monaghan that spark that they needed, and his three scores were out of the top drawer. And I always thought Owen Duffy is kind of a filler player on the Monaghan forward line. On the evidence of the other night, definitely. I didn't realise he was that good a finisher, lads. I thought he was
added
always
a lot to them, didn't he?
Added
he
a real
in,
spark.
Yeah.
That Monaghan just did not seem to have until he came on, and then Fermanagh dropped their heads and then they just ran him up.
It can happen though as well when you have a guy like that who's been maybe in and out of the team, but he's obviously a quality player, and more often he's in the team and he's starting games. And you know, when he then gets dropped, especially for the championship, you know, whatever about the league being in now, but when you're not starting first round of the championship, you know, a guy like that who's round a few years probably just has that bit of anger then, but when he comes on, you know he's going to make an impact and, you know, do something positive. And fair play to him, he did.
Yeah, no, he did. Conan, I'm glad you mentioned Brendan Murphy, because Brendan is on the line, because he's after winning performance the weekend. Carlo won performance the weekend. Congratulations, Brendan. It's your first win in Leinster since 2011. Set up a meeting with the Dobbs. You must be delighted.
Yeah, it was great at the final whistle there. About 6 years is a long time, and just to see what it meant to the people of Carlow, and you know, the scenes afterwards, you know, days like that don't come around too often for us, so you know, it was great, and it's an exciting 2 weeks ahead.
Yeah, so you've got a big date with Dublin. Is almost like a punishment for such a great win.
Yeah, I suppose we could sit back and look at it that way, and you know, you might get a bit downbeat, but listen, it is what it is, and you know, for Carlow football, it's just great that we've an extra 2 weeks in the Leinster Championship, and you know, we'll do the best that we can in the 2 weeks training, and just, I suppose, put in the biggest amount of it, the biggest effort we can on the day, and look at whatever happens, but we're just going to enjoy it, enjoy the build up, and enjoy the big crowd, and playing against one of the best teams, for me, I think, that I've ever played the game. So these days don't come around too often. Whatever happens at the final whistle, well, then so be it. But you know, we need to be positive about this, and we need to kind of really drive into training now for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and you're actually in work today, so things have changed since I was playing. Like, usually you take the Monday off after a championship game.
Or a couple of years ago, I would have been at the same thing. But this growing up crack, you know, it hits you at some point. But no, I suppose it's right. I was thinking about not going in, but you know, I just try to keep the head down now, get back into work, get the body right now, and just try to get ready for the game. We spoke after the game yesterday, and we just said, listen, we'll enjoy tonight, but if we've any chance of, you know, of representing Carlo well, we need to be fresh. We need to really mind ourselves. So, you know, we had a good night last night. I could tell him a little bit earlier, but you know, it's all part and parcel of it, and we're just looking forward now to 2 weeks time.
Ah, yeah, you have to be able to enjoy the wins as well. And you got a lovely bit of exposure on the Sunday game too. You had Turlough, your manager, on it, which was a nice little touch by the Sunday game. So, you know, it's not like your good win was just brushed.
No, and you know, for some people in I suppose the bigger counties, they might take for granted that sort of thing. But for Carlo, that's huge. Like in Turlough, went up there yesterday. You know, the pubs, every pub in Carlo quieting down yesterday evening, you know, to watch the Sunday game and to see the bit of exposure that you know Carlo and Turlough got. You know, it's great. And yesterday, I suppose I haven't won much in my career, but I'd almost compare it to winning a county final with my club. You know, that was the sort of adrenaline rush, the feeling after it. It was incredible. And little things like this, Carlo need these little days to really bring it on. And, you know, there was a minor team playing beforehand who were unlucky not to win. But for them to be able to sit in the stand afterwards and see a Carlo team win, it's huge because it doesn't happen too often. And therefore, younger players don't aspire to be a Carlo senior footballer because we don't achieve success. So if we can just get these little kind of, I suppose, little steps along the way that create a bit of an interest in the setup, you know, it'll be great and it'll really kind of drive Carlo football on.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. Like it's a vicious circle when you're not performing, the young fellas don't see it, and then they come up into a culture that's not used to winning, and then they don't have that culture, and it's never ending. So it's good to kind of break that. I want to talk about you, Brendan, because Gooch last night gave you a lovely compliment, and he said, you know, you'd get on any team in the country, and I think a lot of people would agree with that. Is it frustrating that you're never really able to show your ability on the biggest stage, you know, in Croke Park in big games, when you're almost watching those big games like a fan during the summer, which, you know, when you have that level of ability, how frustrating is it?
I suppose it is. It's frustrating. It's frustrating, I'd say, for any lads. Obviously, you know, you'd love to be there and you'd love to be playing in the big games. But I suppose you have to be realistic about there's been better footballers than me in weaker counties as well, you know, the likes of Leighton Glynn and these Declan Brown type players.
Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't get to that either, so I can't pop my head up or anything like that, you know, and give out. You know, I'm proud of where I'm from. I'm a Carlo man through and through. And, you know, there's other lads there, teams, the likes of Sean Gannon, Daniel St. Ledger, Paul Broderick. They're phenomenal footballers as well, and they could feel the very same because they're not getting the exposure, but, you know, I suppose in one way you just have to accept that you're never going to be there on the big day. So that when the days like yesterday come, you really have to, I suppose, just attack them, like just make them the special day. Don't let the days pass. And if that's our only good period of football for the summer, well then at least we can just hold our heads up high and say, well, we took our chance and we delivered on the day. But I hope the lads from the bigger counties really appreciate what they have when they're playing in these big days, you know, because there's hundreds of thousands of footballers who would just love to be in their position that never will get the chance, you know.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate. And like, not to get into championship structures and everything with you, but do you think, like, if a second tier, if you had a Division 1 All-Ireland and a Division 2 All-Ireland, that Carlo would actually start the year thinking, right, we could, you know, get to an All-Ireland semi-final in the Division 2, you know, and that would be in Croke Park, and suddenly you've got a lot more to play for rather than be thrown into the hat with everybody?
Yeah, no, I think that would be a good way of working the system. You know, I suppose it's no secret that the championship probably structure isn't working at the minute due to the gulf in the big teams compared to the weaker teams like ourselves. Something like that would be great because it give you a bit of belief that, yeah, we can compete and we can get to Croke Park. I don't know if you could tie it in somewhere, but getting into the series further on, though, now the Division 1 series, if you could tie it in that way, to really give you something to, I suppose, to aspire to, because, you know, look, we're no easy. Like, we know what's coming in 2 weeks' time. We want to do our best, but yeah, definitely something like that has to be worked out for, I suppose, for football in weaker counties to develop as well, because it is very hard to go training back in October, November, and you're looking at maybe one, two championship games, and then that's it. You know, sometimes you're scratching your head, you're like, why are we still doing this, you know? So something like that would be great for the week of counties to get a couple of more games in the summer. And like you said, get to Croke Park, because we don't get there too often.
Yeah. What is it about the commitment this year now in Carlow? We had Turlock last night saying everybody's committed. And I don't know, is there something in the air down around Laois and Carlow, but it's always the same. Like, lads aren't in on the squad and you hear the same stories out of both camps. What's changed this year that everybody's wanted to get in and play?
Yeah, this year has been different. I think Stephen Poacher, Thurlow and Tommy and Benji and Damien, a couple of other lads, they've been involved there, and they're great Carlow men, and really, I suppose you can see how much it means. So they made a good move last year and brought in Stephen Poacher for a couple of sessions around the championship time. Stephen Poacher, and he was very good straight away. He made a bit of a difference. He brought something different to train that maybe we haven't seen or we haven't been exposed to over the years. So when he came back on board this year, a lot of us, I think, who were maybe thinking, geez, are we going, are we committing, or are we not? When we found out Stephen Poacher was on board, we said, right, we'll really commit to it this year, because he's excellent. His knowledge and his thinking on the game is something that we're not used to down in Carlow. So to have him on board and then to really see how the trainings have been going over the league, there's been something different and we've been more organised, and lads really bought into it. And we were disappointed not to get promoted. We slipped up in the league, but I think that really kind of brought lads together then for a championship. And we said, listen, it's a home game, and let's just give it a crack. And everyone, the training has been brilliant. It's been the best training since I've been involved with Carlow anyway. And some of the younger lads, which I was talking about earlier, the younger lads have come onto the panel. They're really driving the older players on, which hasn't happened before. If you aren't playing well, then you're comfortable in your position anyway. So
yeah,
to have the likes of these young lads coming on who are really kind of really hungry to play football and really excited players, that's kind of picked up the level of training as well. So it's been enjoyable to be a part of it.
So you weren't shocked at this win at all, like most people were. I'm delighted that I tipped you last Thursday, but there wasn't too many. But from what I heard out of the campus, you were full sure you were going to win that game.
Yeah, and I suppose it kind of reminds me back of, I don't know, 6 years ago, but going into the Louth game, I really felt we were going to win. And after the league, we had a week off this year. After the league, we had a week off and we got back into it. And training, it's been very, very good. I think the level of football and the quality of football has really been on a higher level than what we've been used to in previous years. We played a couple of practice games as well. We played Clare, we played Antrim, and we played Laois. And then we went into a training camp up in Johnstown House for a weekend. And coming out of that training camp, the mood was great. The work that was done over the weekend was phenomenal. So yeah, going in yesterday, I was full of confidence. I was thinking, yeah, we're going to turn them over here. And even at half time, I suppose in recent years, you think, geez, we've had a good half an hour here. You know, are we going to fall apart now in the second half, or are we going to keep going? But just at half time, everyone knew that there was more in us. And we could have won by more. We gave them a couple of soft goals and we missed a couple of goal chances ourselves, but yeah, the belief was there, and everyone fed off it really, and that's where the performance came from.
Yeah, and like, it's funny that you mentioned that, because like, I mean, they got two goals in the second half and they were sucker punches while you were the better team and you were stretching a lead, and then you were pegged back. And a lot of time, that's a perfect excuse to get into lads' heads if the belief wasn't there. Oh, here we go again. It's not to be our day. You know what I mean? Wexford are just getting goals whenever we actually start playing well. And when they're favourites, usually the underdogs might crumble them, but you didn't.
Yeah, and I spoke to a couple of Carlow supporters after the game, and they were saying that, you know, it was great to finally see a Carlow team really kind of sticking the chest out when Wexford really put it up to his fought back. And you know, you got the lead going again, because in recent years we've done that, like the same as any, you know, every championship year you see a couple of teams playing very well for 50 minutes of a game and then losing by 10 points. So we've done that in the past, we've been there. So yesterday when they got the goals, it was a bit of a sucker punch, but we knew once we got it up the field to the likes of Paul Broderick, you know, you have a man there who's going to put it over the bar every time. So he actually got a point after their second goal to settle us down and really kind of get us back into the game again. But in recent years we would have fallen, so kind of coming out of the game, that was probably the most pleasing thing, that we really just said, no, we're going to win this today, and we drove on.
Yeah, exactly. I saw you tweeting in 2013 that a Carlow supporter told you to retire after a game, so I'm sure there was no one telling you to retire yesterday.
No, not to maintain anyway, I don't think, but yeah, I remember that day.
I saw Tomás O'Shea tweeting that the GAA should change the game from a Moore Park to Dr. Cullen Park, and I'm not going to sweet talk you. I don't fancy your chances here, Brendan, because we campaigned last year to get it out of Nolan Park and into a Moore Park, and it fell on deaf ears. So I think at this late stage, you know, you'd be playing in a Moore Park by the looks of things.
Yeah, no, I suppose either way, we don't really mind where we're playing, but it would have been nice. It'll go down as a day in history for Carlo GAA if we could bring the All-Ireland Champions to our own pitch. But look, the only GAA make the rules, and we know now that they don't like changing their minds, you know, once they've made the decision. So listen, we'll play them wherever we have to play them. We'll make a great day of it anyway, but it is a pity that we can't look forward to, you know, Dublin coming to Carlo on the June Bank Holiday weekend. Like it's I suppose days like that never really come around for Carlo GAA, but you know, what can we do, I suppose.
Yeah, and in Dr. Cullen you could ambush them in the tunnel there or something like that.
We could maybe lock the gate at the top of the tunnel and we'll play away without.
Yeah, let
a couple of supporters.
Let 12 or 13 of them out and lock 2 or 3 of them back in.
Lock them there, man. Unlucky then.
Yeah, come here, Brendan. Thanks very much for taking the call. Best of luck against the Dubs.
No, well, thanks, Ollie. Cheers.
Yeah, all right, that's all we have time for this week. We'll be back on Thursday with a preview show. The big one next week is Tyrone and Derry, so we'll see you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.